This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and in today's program, a roundup of occupation events across the nation and around the world, including civil rights leaders celebrating the continuity of the Occupy Wall Street movement. Also, the economic Occupy-compatible prophecies of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Also, the use of chemical warfare against peaceful students sitting in at the University of California in Davis.
Movements to shake the society must be intergenerational.
When I saw the people on Wall Street taking over, it just brought back some images from that time in 61, 62, 63, when we battled racism in the South. But this time, you have a group of people who were like dealing with some things that are troubling my mind now. It was just wonderful to like turn on the TV and see my people say, you got to come and deal with this. Wonderful.
I've been in the movement for over 50 years. I live in Greensboro, North Carolina, the home of the historic sit-in movement that spread across the nation.
Occupy Wall Street is one of the most beautiful, significant, and powerful movements emerging in the century in our country.
The power of organized consumers, if you respect my dollar, you must respect my person. We will no longer spend our money where we cannot get substantial jobs. We still need some Paul Revere of conscience to alert every hamlet and every village of America that revolution is still at hand.
This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And today we feature a roundup of events regarding the occupation movements in New York, at Wall Street, and across the country. Here in New York, where customers of Citibank tried to withdraw their funds and were entrapped by police and arrested, that incident has resulted in a lawsuit. Police officers manhandled a Citibank client as she tried to close her bank account in support of Occupy Wall Street. That, according to a federal civil rights case, marking the first of its kind from this particular movement. On the 15th of October, Heather Carpenter marched into the Manhattan City Bank on 6th Avenue branch with a group of demonstrators, and her fiancé planned to withdraw their money from the Citibank account because they were charging extra fees if the account dips under $6,000. New York City Police Chief Joseph Esposito ordered the bank to lock its doors and confined the customers inside, whereupon the police announced, "You are all under arrest." During the incident, There are photographs and evidence being submitted that a police officer identified as John Doe number one allegedly grabbed the woman from behind and cupped his hands under her breasts. An attached photo exhibit documents that alleged grope. The couple says that they were incarcerated for 32 hours and then released on their own recognizance. On November 14th, the Manhattan District Attorney announced that he would dismiss the charges against the complainants. They are seeking punitive damages for false arrest, excessive force, and municipal liability. In Portland, Oregon, 300 people turned out for a demonstration Sunday to protest the eviction of the Occupy Portland, Oregon encampment. That rally came about a week after the camp was broken up. Speakers said the dismantled encampment forced the city to confront issues of homelessness and other social issues, saying that those problems had been easily hidden before the Occupy movement. And in Toronto, protesters at the camp there have received new eviction notices from the city after a judge ruled today that they must end their five-week-long encampment at a downtown park. One of the protesters, Sakura Saunders, said, "Our right to carry out this protest, which is a global movement, is being threatened for a simple municipal bylaw, but we're going to continue to be here and to transform this movement." There was also a reaction in Oakland, where the Occupy Oakland movement, in response to the multi-city coordinated pushback against the Occupy movement, issued a declaration that there will be a West Coast port blockade on the 12th of December in response to the evictions of Occupy camps that were launched by New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
"Proposal for a coordinated West Coast port shutdown, passed with unanimous consensus by vote of the Occupy Oakland General Assembly, November 18, 2012. In response to coordinated attacks on the occupations and attacks on workers across the nation, Occupy Oakland calls for the blockade and disruption of the economic apparatus of the 1% with a coordinated shutdown of ports on the entire West Coast on December 12. The 1% has disrupted the lives of longshoremen and port truckers and the workers who create their wealth, just as coordinated nationwide police attacks have turned our cities into battlegrounds in an effort to disrupt our Occupy movement. We call on each West Coast occupation to organize a mass mobilization to shut down its local port. Our eyes are on the continued union busting and attacks on organized labor, in particular the rupture of longshoremen jurisdiction in Longview, Washington by the EGT. Already, Occupy Los Angeles has passed a resolution to carry out a port action on the Port of Los Angeles on December 12, to shut down SSA terminals, which are owned by Goldman Sachs. Occupy Oakland expands this call to the entire West Coast, and calls for continuing solidarity with the longshoremen in Longview, Washington in their ongoing struggle against the EGT. The EGT is an international grain exporter led by Bunge Limited, a company constituted of 1% bankers whose practices have ruined the lives of the working class all over the world, from Argentina to the west coast of the U.S. During the November 2nd general strike, tens of thousands shut down the Port of Oakland as a warning shot to EGT to stop its attacks on Longview. Since the EGT has disregarded this message, and continues to attack the longshoremen at Longview, we will now shut down ports along the entire West Coast. Participating occupations are asked to ensure that during the port shutdowns the local arbitrator rules in favor of longshoremen not crossing community picket lines in order to avoid recriminations against them. Should there be any retaliation against any workers as a result of their honoring pickets or supporting our port actions, additional solidarity actions should be prepared. In the event of police repression of any of the mobilizations, shutdown actions may be extended to multiple days. In solidarity and struggle, Occupy Oakland."
The declaration of a December 12th West Coast port shut down all the way from Los Angeles north to Seattle, all along the west coast of the United States. This is 5 o'clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And in today's program, there was a synthesis of the civil rights and the Occupy movement. And in this program, we shall hear from the Greensboro elders who over the weekend declared the solidarity between the two movements. We'll hear from Reverend James Lawson, Bernice Reagan, Reverend Nelson Johnson, a friend of my family, family from my hometown in Greensboro, North Carolina. He was a victim of the Klan shooting that resulted in several deaths during a labor protest there. We shall also hear the economic prophecy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and its relevance to the Occupy movement today, as well as the observations of President John F. Kennedy in regard to mass mobilized public demonstrations and protests for various rights, be they civil rights or economic rights. And this also, the president of the University of California at Davis, the president of the entire system, said that he was appalled at this weekend's macing and pepper spraying of peacefully sitting in students at the University of California at the Davis campus. There were similar protests at a dozen University of California campuses. But in this particular case of egregious use of what some are terming chemical warfare against peaceful protesters, a group of protesters from Sacramento is now marching on the campus at Davis, and others are gathering there also. The person in charge, UC Davis Chancellor Linda Katehi, says that she's been inundated with reaction from alumni, students, and faculty. As a matter of fact, the UC Davis Faculty Association has called for her resignation. So far, she is stonewalling. She says that for her part, she's simply accelerating a 30-day deadline for a task force investigating the incident. And in today's program, we shall hear the acoustic horror of the macing or pepper spraying of those students who were using the tactics of the Gandhian or the civil rights movement at the University of California campus at Davis, that in support of the overall Occupy Wall Street movement. We begin with the sound of that element of police brutality that has resulted in the suspension of the campus police chief for the time being, as well as an eerie silence as the embattled chancellor walks through thousands of students sitting quietly later that same day, shunning through silence she who supervised the attack on the students. This is 5 o'clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and here now we go to the University of California at Davis.
We're giving you a moment of peace.
We're giving you a moment of peace.
We're giving you
women up here.
You can go.
You can go.
You can go.
We will not follow you.
You can go. 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 You can go.
None of you's getting attention.
You can go. 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 You can go.
Chancellor, do you plan to address the students at all?
Yes, on Monday in the General Assembly.
Chancellor, do you still feel threatened by the students?
We've asked her to be silent, respectful exit.
Did you feel at all trapped inside, Chancellor?
No. I never felt that.
The call to your resignation, you feel revolted?
You feel like a silent, respectful exit.
That's fine. I can feel like
behind us, we shall not be moved. The people are behind us, we shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's planted by the water, we shall not be moved.
We shall not.
We shall not. We shall not be moved. We we shall not be moved. We're the 99%. We shall not be moved. That's like a tree that's standing by the water. We shall not be moved.
We shall not.
We shall not be moved. We shall.
I'm going to be blunt. I'm not sure it can be, because movements to shake the society must be intergenerational.
When I saw the people on Wall Street taking over, it just brought back some images from that time in 61, 62, 63, when we battled racism in the South. But this time, you have a group of people who were like dealing with some things that are troubling my mind now. It was just wonderful to like turn on the TV and see my people say, you got to come and deal with this. Wonderful.
I've been in the movement for over 50 years. I live in Greensboro, North Carolina, the home of the historic sit-in movement that spread across the nation.
Occupy Wall Street is one of the most beautiful, significant, and powerful movements emerging in this century in our country.
I started in the movement as an activist in high school in Richmond, Virginia, and moved on to Duke University in the 60s, one of the first black students. And I am just ecstatic about the fact that that is happening in New York, in my hometown, Greensboro, all over this country, all over the world. It really offers some hope.
The time was 1960, the place, the USA. February 1st became a history-making day. Greensboro across the land, the news spread far and wide. Silently and bravely, youth took the giant stride. Heed the call.
Heed the call, Americans all.
Shine.
Equal sign.
Sisters and brothers.
Brothers in dignity.
Brothers and sisters.
Sisters in pride.
Nashville, Tennessee, Denver, Colorado, to Washington, D.C. There rose a cry for freedom and human liberty. Oh, come along, my people, and take a seat with me. Heed the call,
Americans all.
This is the land we cherish, the land of liberty. How can Americans deny my people equality? Constitution says you can, and Christians you should know. Jesus died that morning so all of us could grow. Heed the call.
Heed the call, Americans all.
Side.
Side by equal side.
Sisters and brothers.
Brothers in dignity.
Brothers and sisters.
Sisters in
and of hate shall turn me from my goal. No Jim Crow law or police state shall stop my freebound soul. 5,000 people bound in jail, lift our heads and sing. We'll travel on to freedom like songbirds on the wing. Heed the call.
Heed the call, Americans all.
Let me first say my complete solidarity with what the young people and older people are doing in terms of expressing anger and frustration. And so I applaud them. I want to urge them to practice a discipline, a spiritual discipline based upon nonviolence.
Frustration and discord are burning in every city, north and south, where legal remedies are not at hand. Redress is sought in the streets, in demonstrations, parades and protests, which create tension and threaten violence and threaten lives. We face, therefore, a moral crisis as a country and a people. It cannot be met by repressive police action. It cannot be left to increased demonstrations in the streets. It cannot be quieted by token moves or talk. It is a time to act, and the Congress, in your state and local legislative body, and above all, in all of our daily lives. It is not enough to pin the blame on others, to say this is a problem of one section of the country or another, or to deplore the facts that we face. A great change is at hand, and our task, our obligation, is to make that revolution, that change, peaceful and constructive for all. Those who do nothing are inviting shame as well as violence. Those who act boldly are recognizing right as well as reality. This is one country. It has become one country because all of us and all the people who came here had an equal chance to develop their talent. We cannot say to 10% of the population that you can't have that right. Your children can't have the chance to develop whatever talents they have. But the only way that they are going to get their rights is to go in the street and demonstrate. I think we owe them and we owe ourselves a better country than that.
Having been on the staff of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, in Mississippi, in Alabama, in Georgia, went to jail, I let out a yell. It is so time for this. When was it going to happen? So I am just ecstatic over what they're doing, how the movement has spread. It's even in my little town in Gainesville, Florida. We have Occupy Gainesville.
Fanon used to say, each generation must, out of relative obscurity, discover its own mission and then fulfill that mission or deny it. But in this case, I think the young people are trying to fulfill their mission and to do what needs to be done, and that is to address the deep inequities in our society based on the financial arrangements of our society, inequities that lead not to life but to death.
I wear garments touched by hands from all over the world. 35% cotton, 65% polyester. The journey begins in Central America in the cotton fields of El Salvador. In a province soaked in blood, pesticide sprayed workers toiled in a broiling sun, pulling cotton for $2 a day. Then we move on up to another rung, Cargill. A top 40 trading conglomerate takes the cotton through the Panama Canal. Up the eastern seaboard, coming to the U.S. of A. for the first time. In South Carolina, at the Burlington Mills, joins a shipment of polyester filament courtesy of the New Jersey Petrochemical Mills of DuPont. DuPont strands of filament begins in the South American country of Venezuela, where oil riggers bring up oil from the earth for $6 a day. Then Exxon, largest oil company in the world, upgrades the product in the country of Trinidad and Tobago, then back into the Caribbean and Atlantic seas to the factories of DuPont on the way to the Burlington Mills. In South Carolina, to meet the cotton from the blood-soaked fields of El Salvador. In South Carolina, Burlington factories hum with the business of weaving oil and cotton into miles of fabric for Sears, who takes his bounty back into the Caribbean Sea, headed for Haiti this time. May she be one day soon. Far from the Port-au-Prince Palace, third world women toil doing piecework to see a specification for $3 a day. My sisters make my blouse. It leaves the third world for the last time, coming back into the sea to be sealed in plastic for me, this third world sister. And I go to the Sears department store where I buy my blouse on sale for 20% discount. On my hands clean.
When we think about the most precious things that we have, number one, it's our bodies. Number two, it's our time. This, to me, is the start of a whole new movement. We've done the civil rights movement. We've done the women's movement. We've done the movement for LGBT equality, the environmental movement, and the peace movement. But all of these also hang and rest on what's going to happen to our country economically. It's not fair that the people who do all of the work in our country then gets us so little of the pie. All of you folks out there who are either occupying, who are supporting the occupiers, I congratulate you.
Dr. Abernathy, fellow delegates to this, the 10th annual session of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, my brothers and sisters from not only all over the South, but from all over the United States of America. Our citizenship education program continues to lay the solid foundation of adult education and community organization upon which all social change must ultimately rest. The power of organized consumers, if you respect my dollar, you must respect my person. We will no longer spend our money where we cannot get substantial jobs. We still need some Paul Revere of conscience to alert every hamlet and every village of America that revolution is still at hand. Yes, we need a chart. We need a compass. Indeed, we need some North Star to guide us into a future shrouded with impenetrable uncertainties. Now, in order to answer the question, where do we go from here, which is our theme, we must first honestly recognize where we are now. As long as the mind is enslaved, the body can never be free. Psychological freedom, a firm sense of self-esteem. I am somebody. I am a person. I am a man with dignity and honor. Now, power properly understood is nothing but the ability to achieve purpose. It is the strength required to bring about social, political, and economic change. Economic change. We must develop progress that will drive the nation to a guaranteed annual income. Early in the century, this proposal would have been greeted with ridicule and denunciation as destructive of initiative and responsibility. At that time, economic status was considered the measure of the individual's abilities and talents. And in the thinking of that day, the absence of worldly goods indicated a want of industrious habits and moral fiber. We've come a long way in our understanding of human motivation and of the blind operation of our economic system. We also know that no matter how dynamically the economy develops and expands, it does not eliminate all poverty. The problem indicates that our emphasis must be twofold. We must create full employment, or we must create incomes. People must be made consumers by one method or the other. Once they are placed in this position, We need to be concerned that the potential of the individual is not wasted. New forms of work that enhance the social good will have to be devised for those for whom traditional jobs are not available. We are likely to find that the problem of housing, education, instead of preceding the elimination of poverty, will themselves be affected if poverty is first abolished. The poor transformed into purchasers will do a great deal on their own to alter housing decay. A host of positive psychological changes inevitably will result from widespread economic security. The dignity of the individual will flourish when the decisions concerning his life are in his own hands, when he has the assurance that his income is stable and certain, and when he knows that he has the means to seek self-improvement. Personal conflicts between husband, wife, and children will diminish when the unjust measurement of human worth on a scale of dollars is eliminated. Now our country can do this. John Kenneth Galbraith said that a guaranteed annual income could be done for about $20 billion a year. I say to you today that if our nation can spend $35 billion a year to fight an unjust evil war in Vietnam and $20 billion to put a man on the moon, it can spend billions of dollars to put God's children on their own 2 feet right here on earth. We must honestly face the fact that the movement must address itself to the question of restructuring the whole of American society. And I'm simply saying that more and more, we've got to begin to ask questions about the whole society. We are called upon to help the discouraged beggars in life's marketplace. One day we must come to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. It means that questions must be raised. See, my friends, when you deal with this, you begin to ask the question, who owns the oil? You begin to ask the question, who owns the iron ore? You begin to ask the question, why is it that people have to pay water bills in a world that's two-thirds water? These are words that must be said. I don't think you have me in a bind today. I'm not talking about communism. What I'm talking about is far beyond communism. My inspiration didn't come from Karl Marx. Communism forgets that life is individual. Capitalism forgets that life is social. The kingdom of brotherhood is found neither in the thesis of communism nor the antithesis of capitalism, but in a higher synthesis. America, you must be born again. America, you must be born again. America, you must be born again.
Welcome, welcome world, welcome America, welcome to the life of the 99%. If you're part of that 99% that's hustling, struggling, and treading water, this song is about you. If you're part of the 1% that's not, this is for you to listen to. LaGuardia, let's talk about it.
We are the 99% trying to find the right amount of rent beneath the monument of falling stocks and pocket lint. Our outfits ain't got that fine designer scent. They got that overdrawn college loan kind of stench.
We are
the 99%, 99, 99. And there's a 99% chance you are too occupied. Get in line. 99%, this clenched vision focus. Feeling overlooked, only eviction notice.
Older folks convince the kids it isn't hopeless. It's easier to cope with when you keep their hope lit. We are the 99%. Used cars and credit card limits. Share a room with in-laws in it, but would much rather trade and put some dog paws in it. Some starve and some start a business, while some scarve and some fall finished. We are the 99%, 99, 99. And there's a 99% chance you are too occupied. Giving you the 99%. Put away the violin, put away the violins. Can't stay silent. 1% drives on a man-made island, while the other 99 pays the mileage. A former chef trying to look calm as usual, found 99 ways to cook ramen noodles. A war vet fights to keep a job, it's brutal. There's people marching on the street, man, look it up on Google. We are the 99% that the 1% keeps calling lazy. Even though we are the ones that be raising the 1%, baby. We are the 99%, 99, 99. And there's a 99% chance you are too occupied. Get in line. We are the 99%, 99, 99. And there's a 99% chance you are too occupied. Get in line.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. We heard Anti-Seriatim today. We are the 99%, a hip rock anthem featuring LaGuardia, Fernando Castro, and Devin Arn, concept by Subhash Katesi and produced by Devin Arn. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Where Do We Go From Here, spoken at the Southern Christian Leadership Conference in Atlanta on August 16, 1967. Music mix produced by Shaz Barbaric and Leaf. Also, we heard the Greensboro elders, including Reverend James Lawson, Bernice Reagan of Sweet Honey and the Rock, Reverend Nelson Johnson, Joyce Johnson, Reverend Philip Lawson, Gwendolyn Simmons, Dr. Vincent Harding, and Dolores Huerta. Also, the music of Sweet Honey and the Rock, Are My Hands Clean, and the history of the sit-in movement. President John Fitzgerald Kennedy on mass protest in the United States, and the Clearwater Chorus, We Shall Not Be Moved, a song that was also sung for the 99%, recorded at Foley Square on the N17, November 17th events by Jim Crevo, that on the second Mintsiversary, we do not say two-month anniversary because that's a nonsense phrase, the second Mintsiversary of the Occupy Wall Street movement, which began at Liberty Square, Zuccotti Park, on the 17th of September, 2011. Engineering today by Michael G. Haskins. Our associate producer is Thiago Barroso. We thank you for your communication so far and urge you to stay in touch with your leaks, tips, questions, and suggestions with an email to theshadow@wbai.org or drop a letter to 5 O'Clock Shadow, WBAI, 120 Wall Street, New York, 10005. And for 5 O'Clock Shadow, I'm Robert Knight in New York.